Okay, we've got quarter past, so I'm going to start. Good morning. Welcome to my session. This is a pretty demo-laden session. I've got a bunch of slides, but I want to concentrate mostly on the demos. What I'm going to show you in this session is a whole bunch of different corruptions that you might see in the field yourselves and how you can go about repairing from some of them. So first of all, my name is Paul Randall. I was on the SQL Server Storage Engine team for almost 9 years. And for the purposes of this session, the most important thing was that I wrote CheckDB in repair for SQL Server 2005. So disaster recovery and corruptions in particular are my forte. Okay. The summer of last year, I left the Storage Engine team to join Kimberly running SQLskills.com and doing training, consulting, teaching, and so on. So, but for this session, CheckDB is where it's at. Okay. So why am I here? Why am I doing this? I talked to lots of DBAs, and a large proportion of them have never seen corruption. And people tell me, I don't think I'm ever going to see corruption. My systems are very rock solid. Okay, I've got great hardware and so on. And I always argue and say, look, you can't predict when corruption is going to happen. Okay, at some point in your career as a DBA, you're going to see corruption of some kind. Okay, so it's worth you being able to know what the signs of corruption are and what to do when you actually get corruption. So a lot of people, they don't realize they've got corruption, either because they don't know how they're supposed to check to see if they've got corruption, or they don't know what the warning signs are of corruption, and so they miss them. And the corruption becomes more and more pervasive, and more data loss and downtime happens. So when somebody does have corruption, they don't know what to do about it. They don't know how to fix it. Okay? So that leads to, again, more downtime, more data loss, possible loss of money for the company, job losses even for the DBAs. I've seen that happen as well. So for these DBAs that have never, ever seen corruption, they've never thought about it, they don't know what to do when corruption does happen, one of the common reactions when they do get faced with corruption is panic. And panic can mean that you take the wrong steps. You might end up, say, dropping a database or dropping a suspect database or running repair straight away or rebuilding a log straight away and causing more damage. Okay? So the idea behind this session is I'm going to give you a bunch of tools and some examples so that if you do get hit by corruption, or when you do get hit by corruption, you don't have to panic. You know that corruption is going to happen. You can take some steps to figure out what's gone wrong and then take some steps to get rid of corruption. So most of the demos that I'm going to do are not using backups. They're using repair or using kind of, I wouldn't say hacky methods, but unorthodox methods to get around the corruption if you don't have a backup. Okay. So first off, how do you know when something's going wrong? There's a bunch of different things that could happen that say, in your mind, okay, I've got some corruption happening here. So the first one is you could be sitting at your desk as a DBA and a user phones up and says, you know, I just hit go on this application and my connection got dropped. And I hit go again and it got dropped again. Okay, so a very common thing that happens with SQL Server when it's processing some data that's corrupt is it could throw what's called an assert, okay, which could cause the connection to be dropped. Or you could hit an 823 or an 824 error, a disk corruption error. If one of these gets hit by SQL Server, it will drop the connection. So these are the kind of first hints that you're getting that something's actually going wrong with your IO subsystem, and you've actually got corruption. Some other things that could show that you've got corruption is if you have regular backup jobs, and if you've set your backups to use the with checksum command, which is checking all the page checksums of all the pages of the database that's getting backed up. If these start to fail, you might see error messages like 3043, which is the backup's found a checksum and it said, I'm not going to finish this backup because the database you're trying to back up is actually corrupt. If you have alerts configured on your system, so you should have alerts for any errors above Sev 18. So that's going to catch things like 823 and 824, which are Sev 24 errors. If you have alerts that start firing, that means you've got corruption on your system and you need to do something about it. Okay? There's also another error message, error 825, which is a little bit more insidious and harder to trap. Error 825 is SQL Server in 2005 has this thing that says, if I get an 823 or an 824 on the first read attempt, I'll retry it three more times. And if after the three retries it succeeds, then everything carries on as far as the user is concerned. All the DBA knows about this is that a severity 10 error message, 825, is put into the error log. But that severity 10 error message is really saying, you've got transient problems with your IO subsystem. So you should also have an alert on this error message 825. Okay. And then the last thing is if you have regular maintenance jobs that are doing backups or CheckDBs, if these start to fail, then that's a sure sign that you've got corruption of some kind. Okay. But over and over again, I've seen systems where somebody's posted on a forum saying, I've got this corrupt database, and I look back through the maintenance job history, and it looks like it's been failing CheckDB for a month, but nobody noticed. Okay? So if you do go to the trouble of putting maintenance jobs in your system, check the maintenance jobs to make sure they're actually running. Okay? So as soon as corruption is suspected, what do you do? Don't panic, first of all. Okay? There's a set of steps that you can go through without having to panic. Now, the best thing is you've already thought about this in advance, and you've come up with and written down a set of steps so that all the DBAs in your company know what the set of steps are that you should go through when they suspect that there's corruption. Kimberly and I always like to say you should have some kind of disaster recovery plan that's written by your most experienced DBA and tested by your most junior DBA. Because, you know, it's always kind of happens that the corruption happens at, say, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's the most junior person that's on duty. And if they don't know how to respond, and if they panic, then it's going to cause more and more problems. So the first thing is don't panic. Okay? Determine the extent of the corruption before doing anything. That usually means run CheckDB. Okay? Run CheckDB and let it finish. You could also look in the error log. If there's been any 823s or 824s that users haven't reported to you, they will be in the SQL Server error log. They'll also be in the Windows event log. Now, in the Windows event log, you'll also get errors, say, from the disk I/O controllers, for instance, saying something's gone wrong. So you can look in all these different places. You can also check back in the maintenance job history. If you're not checking your job history, it's worth checking back to see how long the corruption has been there. The longer the corruption has been there, the more likely it is that more corruption has happened since the first one happened, and you've got more pervasive corruption. Right? So once you've figured out, well, even while CheckDB is running, for instance, figure out what your backups are that you've got available. Okay? You always want to make sure you've got backups. We stress that over and over again in conferences and in classes that we teach. Make sure you're taking backups. You don't want to only be thinking about what backups there are and whether there's a backup strategy the first time you have corruption. Okay? Wait for CheckDB to finish. Okay? It's always important to wait for CheckDB to finish before you decide what you're going to do. Okay? The errors that you get back from CheckDB may say that you don't actually need to do anything. Or you may be able to use the errors to figure out whether you've got a choice between doing a restore or a repair. And I'll get to that later on in the session. So running CheckDB. CheckDB, by default, will only give you back the first 200 errors that it finds. So you always want to run with the switch that says all error messages. Because you may look at the 200 error messages that it prints you out by default, and it looks like they're all, say, non-clustered index corruptions, in which case you could rebuild the index yourself. But there could be a 201st error that wasn't printed out that was something much more insidious. Okay? So always run with all error messages. The other thing is, if you ever run CheckDB, you'll see that it prints out gazillions of information about this many rows and this many pages and all the different indexes and tables. In a disaster recovery situation, that is not relevant. You only want to know about what's wrong. So there's another switch you should use, which is no info messages, which cuts out all of the irrelevant information and only tells you the errors. So run with all error messages and no info messages. So something to be aware of is there's a bunch of different algorithms inside CheckDB that are engineered to run quickly on the case where there's no corruptions. And if there is a corruption, the algorithm has to go back and do some more deeper checking. That's called a deep dive algorithm. Do some deeper checking to figure out what's actually gone wrong. The deep dive algorithms take a lot longer than the regular no corruption algorithms. But in the vast majority of cases, I mean, think how many hundreds of thousands or millions of times a day CheckDB is run around the world, and there's not corruption. In the vast majority of cases, there's no corruption, so I wanted to engineer for the obvious no corruption case, so everybody gets their CheckDBs running quickly. Now, in SP1 and before of 2005, there was no way to tell that one of these deep dive algorithms was running, apart from the fact that your CheckDB started to run longer than usual, which is another good point. Have a good idea how long CheckDB roughly takes to run in your database. Okay? In a disaster recovery situation, if it gets to running on 12, 14, 16 hours, and you don't know that it usually takes 2 hours to run, you might just keep waiting and waiting and waiting and not realize that that is actually a sign that you've got corruption. So the key is waiting for it to complete, waiting for it to tell you what's actually wrong. So here's an interesting story from the field. There was an American investment bank, and they had a big database in Britain, and the database was holding all of the online stock trades for all their UK customers. And they had a report of corruption. Nobody took note of what the corruption was in the report. Okay? So they started running CheckDB. It got about 10 hours in, and they thought, this is taking longer than usual, so they killed CheckDB. Then they started to restore their backups onto a different server. They didn't overwrite their database, which was good. They started to restore onto a different server. 13 hours into the restore, the backup restore failed because the backup was corrupt. They hadn't been validating their backups. Okay, so now they're 23 hours into down. Oh, and they'd taken their database offline as soon as they knew there was corruption. So their stock trading system was down. So 23 hours in, and they were still down, and they were back to square one. So then they started CheckDB up, which actually took over 30 hours to complete. When it finished, it said, there's one missing non-clustered index record. Okay? So they were down. Their database was down for 3 days, and they actually got fined over £10 million by the UK government for being down. Okay? Because they didn't wait for CheckDB to complete. And the other error was they didn't figure out, they didn't take a note of what the initial report of the corruption was. If they'd taken note of that, they'd have known immediately that it was just non-clustered index corruption. But always wait for CheckDB to complete. So interpreting CheckDB output. So you run CheckDB and you get this output. What on earth does it mean? CheckDB output is not the most friendly, I would say. There's more than 100 different errors that CheckDB can put out. Some of them are simpler than others. A lot of them are very complicated. There's a lot more in 2008 because every release that comes along, every new feature that's put in, CheckDB is upgraded to cope with it. So for instance, file stream. There's another 20 or 30 different error messages that could go wrong with file stream that CheckDB can report. Some of these error messages can also have lots and lots of different states. All of them mean different things. So if you have a CheckDB output and there's, say, one error message, then you and I have got a chance of figuring out what's going wrong. If you have a CheckDB output with, say, 100 different error messages, it's going to be incredibly difficult to figure out what's going on. And in most cases, it's not even worth trying. Okay? But there are some tips and tricks that you can use to try and figure out what CheckDB is telling you. And that's what I'm going to go through in the next few slides and demos. So first thing, did CheckDB actually finish properly? It's possible that CheckDB can fail. There can be some corruption that are so bad that CheckDB cannot run. CheckDB needs a bunch of information out of the database to be able to do more checks in the database. One of the things it uses at the very bottom level is the metadata in the database. If that metadata is corrupt in some ways, then it can actually force CheckDB to fail. Okay? So there's the first set of error messages that you might see, 7984 through 7988. If you see any of these, what's happened is it's found a corruption in one of the five critical system tables, and the same thing in 2000 as well. One of the critical system tables, and it said, okay, the clustered index for this critical system table is corrupt. I cannot use this anymore because I now cannot tell what other tables and so on there are in the database. So I have to stop. 8967. So I mentioned earlier on that SQL Server can do what's called an assert, and you may have seen crash dumps from asserts inside SQL Server. CheckDB used to have a whole bunch of asserts in it, and I changed all of those to be actual error messages so that instead of CheckDB running and suddenly throwing an assert in a crash dump, it actually prints out a message saying, you know, this we got into this state that we didn't expect. Please call product please call product support. 8930 is where there's a metadata corruption. It's not as insidious as a corrupt clustered index of one of these critical system tables. But it's a metadata corruption where CheckDB has gone in and started processing some metadata about a table to build up information about how to check that table, and it's come across something that absolutely doesn't make sense. So the metadata is corrupt in such a way for the database that CheckDB just cannot continue. Okay. Now, a bunch of these error messages are documented in Books Online. A bunch of them are documented in MSDN. They're not all documented. The MSDN team are working through them steadily, adding to them to the online documentation. So now what I want to show you is some of the example fatal errors that you're going to see from CheckDB. So I have a few databases that I've pre-corrupted, and in the last demo, I'm actually going to show you using a hex editor to corrupt a database. So the first one here is a corruption in one of the critical system tables called SysHobbits. Okay? What I've done is I've corrupted the allocation metadata for it. And so you get all these informational messages out, and then right at the bottom, you get this message here. Message 7995, database demo fatal corruption 1, consistency errors in system catalogs prevent further CheckDB processing. That means that CheckDB will not ever run on that database. That means you can never run, you cannot force it to run repair. So in that case, you are going to be forced in a recovery situation to either restore from a backup or to extract as much data as you can. But because it's a system table that's corrupt, you may have problems getting all the data out for all of the tables. Okay? So that's one example there. The key there is this one here, 7995, that says CheckDB cannot continue. Okay? So the second one, this is a database that I corrupted some random fields in the metadata, and now CheckDB won't run at all. Okay, nothing will run on this database at all. So here's a case where CheckDB doesn't even get a chance to give some information. Okay. So I'll try running check catalog, as the error message says, but I'm not holding out high hopes. No, it's so badly corrupt, you can't do anything with it at all. Now, I've seen cases in the field with this kind of error message where running CheckDB doesn't work, but you can narrow it down and figure out which table is actually corrupt by running individual DBCC check table commands. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to try that. So the list of tables is in the sysobjects catalog view. So I can select the list of tables from that catalog view, and here's the list of object IDs. Now these tables here, sysrosec columns, sysrosec, sysalloc units, and so on, these are what I call the critical system tables. A lot of these system tables you cannot actually reference in a query. You can't bind to them, essentially. But I changed DBCC check table in 2005 so that it would actually accept the object IDs rather than the names. So I'll try a couple of these and see if I can actually get in and do a check table on them. Okay, that one's not going to work. Okay, so that one works. So it could be the object ID 4 that's broken. But I'm not going to go through all of them and figure out what they all are. But you could put that into a loop, for instance, loop through all the different object IDs and run check table on them. But only in that case where CheckDB just absolutely won't run at all and just narrow down where the corruption is. Okay? So the third database that I've corrupted is what I've done is I've gone into one of the system tables, and object IDs in a SQL Server database start at 0, and they have to go, not monotonically increasing, they have to increase. There can never be a loop. There can never be a wraparound. What I've done is I've engineered a wraparound. Okay, so at some point, while CheckDB is scanning through the table that holds all the object IDs, it comes across an object ID that it's seen before. And when it does that, it throws one of these 8930 errors that I mentioned, which is the metadata is so corrupt that I can't run CheckDB properly. I don't know what's going on with this. So this message says, database error, database 11 has inconsistent metadata. This error cannot be repaired and prevents further DBCC processing. Please restore from a backup. Okay, so in that case, you have to restore from a backup. You might be able to extract some data out. Okay, but a clear indication there from CheckDB that the database is so screwed up that CheckDB cannot run. Okay, so you're not going to be able to run repair. Okay, so that's fatal corruptions. So the next thing you could look at is, are all the corruptions just from non-clustered indexes? So if CheckDB says that the desired repair level is repair rebuild, that means that all the corruptions it's found are from non-clustered indexes. There are a couple of cases where corruptions can be convoluted and it fools CheckDB into thinking that it's not a non-clustered index. Okay, and so it'll say repair allowed data loss, but the error message will still say that it's a non-clustered index. So you can look at all the actual error messages, and I'm going to show you this in a minute in a demo. You can look at all the error messages and see whether all the index IDs are greater than 0 or 1. In other words, they're not a heap and they're not a clustered index. Okay? If all the errors are in non-clustered indexes, then you don't actually need to run repair. If you don't have a backup, then you could actually manually repair the non-clustered indexes. But there's a trade-off. To be able to run repair, rebuild, any kind of repair option, you've got to put the database into single-user mode. So your database is offline. But if the non-clustered index that's corrupt is very large, say you've got a terabyte-sized non-clustered index, then rebuilding that manually means you need at least a terabyte of extra space, because rebuild has to create the new index before dropping the old one. Okay, so there's a trade-off there. Now, the trade-off becomes more interesting because if the errors in the non-clustered indexes are just missing non-clustered index records, CheckDB has some code in it, and the query processor has some code in it, that allows CheckDB to say to the query processor, go and insert this record in the non-clustered index, no questions asked. Okay? You don't actually have to do an insert delete from the base table. CheckDB can actually just go and fix up the non-clustered indexes on their own. So you have this trade-off between taking your database offline and potentially having a fast repair, or having to take a lot of extra disk space but not take your database offline. Okay? So let's look at a demo where there are only non-clustered index corruptions. So I have another database, so I'm going to run CheckDB on it, and it's going to give me back a whole bunch of errors. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of different errors. So I could look through all these different error messages and see whether all the index IDs are greater than 0 or 1, or I could use an undocumented option called table results. So checkdb and all the other check commands have an option called table results. And what that does is it puts the output from checkdb, you get the exact same error messages back, but you get them back in a nice tabular format. And that's going to allow you to easily see whether all of the error messages are just for non-clustered indexes or not. Because one of the fields in the tabular output is index ID. So that's a lot easier looking down through the table results output than through the non-tabular output to see what all the index IDs are. And if we look down here, we can see that they're all two or more. Now, there's always going to be a couple at the end, which are zero, but that's for the final error messages saying found and fixed how many error messages. But the actual corruptions, all of the errors are for index ID 2. Okay, so we know it's non-clustered indexes. So again, if I wanted to try and repair those with repair rebuild, it won't work because it needs to be in single user mode. So let's go ahead and try and fix these manually. So let's figure out what the index is on... Did I lose sound? Okay, back again, okay. So it's not the primary key index, so it must be customer name. So I'm going to fix up the customer name index, and I'm going to try and do it online, because I have online repair. I have online rebuild in 2005. So I did my index rebuild. I didn't have to take the database offline. And let's run checkdb again. And hopefully it's fixed it. Aha, unfortunately it hasn't, and here's why. Online index rebuild. The way the online index rebuild works is it creates a versioned timestamp of the old index, and it reads the old index to populate the new index. So online rebuild is going to read the old corrupt index rather than going back to the base table. So if you're going to fix up the indexes yourselves manually, you have to use offline rebuild. So if I do an offline rebuild of the index, it'll rebuild it by going back to the base table and actually repopulating the index rather than using the old index again. So that's a further point in the trade-off there between allowing repair to fix it and allowing there, so it's fixed it, and allowing rebuild to fix it. Rebuild, you're going to have to take your table at least into read-only mode, because a rebuild of a non-clustered index based off the base table always share locks the base table. So you've got this trade-off if you've only got non-clustered index records. Okay. So next, was there an unrepairable error found? So repair is not infallible. There are some things that it just cannot repair. Okay? One of the things it cannot repair are PFS allocation bitmaps. PFS allocation bitmaps are one of the building stones that CheckDB uses as well as the metadata to figure out what it is that it's actually checking. If the PFS page is corrupt, then there's no redundant information for it to be able to rebuild the PFS page. That is an error message. If you get any one of those error messages where it's type PFS, then repair won't work at all. There's nothing you can do. There's not even any backdoor or hacky methods that you can use to fix that. You're looking at doing a restore or extracting data out. The problem with extracting data out in that case is a PFS page gives the allocation status of about 64 megabytes worth of data in the database. If the PFS page is corrupt, that 64 megabytes cannot be accessed. So if you go in the extraction route, you're not going to be able to get to that 64 megadata. So that's a case where you want to restore from a backup. 8970. So 8970 is an error message that says, I checked the value that's stored in a particular column type, and the column value is invalid. So for instance, an example there would be a date time column. A date time column is kind of complex. It stores various fields within the column. One of the fields within the column is the number of minutes past midnight. So obviously the number of minutes past midnight cannot be more than 1,439. Otherwise, it would be into the next day. However, that field is stored as a D word. So it's possible that it could be 1,440 or more. And that's a corrupt date time column. So CheckDB can check that. If you get one of those errors, repair cannot fix it. The repair would be change the value. But what would repair change the value to? Okay, it could be a null, it could be a zero, it could be just a random value. Any one of those values could have meaning to your application. There could be a trigger that gets fired if that value gets replicated, say. Okay, so CheckDB will not ever try and repair one of these corrupt data values, but you can do it yourself, and I'm going to show you that in the next demo. 1892. So in 2000, And in fact, in 2005 and 2008, there's a separate command called DBCC check catalog that does kind of high-level checks between the critical system tables. In 2000, I had heard a lot of people saying, well, I don't know when I should run check catalog. Should I run it before checkdb? Should I run it after checkdb? So in 2005, I actually included all the check catalog functionality inside checkdb. So if you see an 8992 error, that is an error message from the check catalog subsystem saying something was corrupt in the metadata. Okay. These also cannot be repaired. There's no metadata repairs. However, depending on the repair, you can actually get in 2005 and hack the system tables to fix those. And I'm going to show you that in a second. These commonly happen because somebody on a 2000 or before database goes in and messes with the system tables manually. Okay? So for instance, deleting an object by going and deleting the row from sysobjects, and then not fixing up things by deleting rows from syscolumns, say. And that's one of the demos that I'm going to show you. So there's a few more obscure ones as well, but these are the main ones that you might see. Okay? So now let me show you a couple of demos of fixing some of these up. So another database. And in this one, what I've done is I've corrupted a column value. So here we see the error message 2570. And it's saying that column price in this table is out of range for a data type float. And it says update the column to a legal value. But it doesn't tell you how to do it. Okay? The way to do it is you actually have to go in and look at the page with DBCC page, figure out the index keys that correspond to that particular row, and then update that row manually. So I'm going to show you how to do that. So we're looking for page 24473, slot 91. So I'm going to use DBCC page to have a look. Now, before you use DBCC page, you should know that although it's undocumented and unsupported, it's incredibly widely used by the SQL team. It's very widely used by product support. It is safe to run in a production system. All it does is read pages. Okay? It never, ever writes anything. It is not going to break your production system. To be able to get the output of DBCC page to come back to your console, you have to turn on this trace flag 3604. All that does is affect where trace output goes to. Okay? So turn on that trace flag and run DBCC page. And here we see the page output. Here's the page header. And all of this information, I've blogged about all the different fields here and what they mean. So you can go to my blog and look for the on disk structures or inside the storage engine tag, and you'll see all this information explained. So let's skip down to slot number 91. Okay, so slot 91. And there's our price field. So dump option 3 that I used of DBCC page will interpret all of the column values out of the record and tell you what they are. And in this case, it's telling us that this float value is what's called NaN, not a number. So the IEEE format that's being used to store float values inside SQL Server has a particular value combination which says this is not our valid float number. And that's what I corrupted the field to be. So here we see this price field is invalid. So we're going to have to go and update it. So I'm guessing that product ID is probably the key of this. So I'm going to remember 243 as the product ID. And I'll check. I'll do a help index on products. And I should be using Kimberly's SP help index 2 that she just rewrote and blogged. Okay, so the index key is product ID. Okay. So first of all, I'm just going to try deleting the record. Because if it's corrupt, I think it was 243. Let me just go back and check to make sure. Was it? Okay, it was 243. So I'm going to try deleting the record. Ah, okay, I can't because obviously some of these sales, this is kind of a sales database, some of these sales are using that particular product ID. So there's a foreign key constraint which says I can't delete the record, which is actually good. So I'm going to have to update it. Now, hopefully, if I had a paper printout or a backup, I'd be able to figure out what the previous value of, or at least the recent value of this product ID's price was. But I don't actually know what it was, so I'm just going to set it to something. So I'm going to update the value to 1 cent, and then I'm going to run checkdb again. And what that should hopefully have done is cleared out that data purity error, and checkdb is now going to run and show me that there's no errors. So there we go. So we manually fixed an unrepairable corruption. Okay? Now, of course, I'll stress again that even though I'm showing you how to do all this stuff, the best thing is always to have a backup. Okay? In the case of this particular corruption, there was one row that was corrupt. So I could have seen, I knew which, what the page was, page 24473 in file ID 1. I could have done a single page restore if I had a full backup with a set of log backups afterwards. I could have fixed that up by using a single page restore. And then that would have allowed me to get right up to the minute point in time recovery and get the correct value back. Okay. But in this case, I'm pretending that I don't. So Sean's asking, how does that type of corruption happen? I could say that it happens randomly, like any other corruption. However, in versions prior to 2005, there's a variety of different ways of being able to import data into a SQL Server database. Not all of the import methods had what's called data purity checking, had range type checking on. And so it was possible to actually import invalid data into the database. These kind of checks are actually available in 2000 as well. If you turn on TraceFlag 2570, CheckDB will do these checks for you. The reason that we didn't want to have these checks turned on by default in 2005 is that people would upgrade and then think if they ran a CheckDB and found these problems, they might think that it was upgrade that had actually corrupted the database. So if you actually look in the README and the what's new, I'm sure you'll read the README, right, when you upgrade. In the README and in the what's new, there it actually explains about these data purity errors and how they could be inserted into the server in previous versions. So that's probably the most common way that that would actually happen. So the question is, are these undocumented commands documented anywhere? DBCC page is not documented anywhere, okay, but it's very widely known. Okay, I documented it when I was back in the storage engine team. I actually documented it on the storage engine blog on MSDN, so kind of semi-officially documented. Okay, and you know it's in Kalen's books, and it's all over the place. Okay, as with any of these undocumented commands, don't be blasé about using them. DBCC page is one you can just safely use. There's a lot of other DBCC commands you might see people using in scripts on the internet. Be careful, okay? Not all of these DBCC commands that are undocumented are as safe as DBCC page, okay? But no, there's no official documentation of them, otherwise they'd be documented, yeah. I mean, there is a move afoot to document things like DBCC page, DBCC extent info, DBCC end, the kind of innocuous ones that people do tend to use. They just haven't got around to it yet. So back to the slide deck just for one slide, because the next slide is another demo slide. Okay, I'm going to show you how to repair a metadata corruption. Okay, so this is a database that I corrupted on 2000 by taking an object and deleting it manually from the system tables. Then I upgraded it to 2005. So let's see what CheckDB says. Okay, so you get check catalog messages back. So this is saying that for this object ID, there's a column in syscolumns that does not have a matching row in sysobjects. So it's saying exactly what I said. I went and deleted an object, but I didn't go and fix up delete all the columns. So this cannot be repaired automatically by 2005. There's no metadata repairs. In fact, even in 2008, there's no metadata repairs. So for this kind of thing, you either have to restore from a backup, or you have to repair it manually. So now I'm going to show you how to repair it manually. So I want to take a note of the object ID. So let's try and repair it first of all, just to prove to ourselves that it's not going to work. Okay, so it didn't fix anything. Okay. So how can we hack the system tables? So let's look at the list of tables again. So here's all the system tables and tables. Now let's narrow it down to those that have kind of column information in. Okay, that's a bit better. So four of them, row set columns, hobbit columns, colpars, and IS columns. So let's see if we can figure out what the list of columns are from each of these and see which one of them looks like they have an object ID in, and that could be the one that's storing the information that we need to get rid of. So the trick to doing that is to select where 1 equals 0. So you don't get any rows back, but it does give you back the columns. But of course, earlier on, remember I said you can't bind to these special system tables, okay? Unless you're using the DAC, the dedicated admin connection. So you can get into SQL Server using the dedicated admin connection, and then you can actually bind to system tables. So let's do the same thing. Oops. typo. Okay, so that doesn't look like object IDs. Now, I know that these are actually internal storage engine tables, so that's not going to have what I want. So let's try Hobbit columns. I don't think that's going to be the one either. No, that's definitely not the one. So the next one is syscall parse. Okay, this looks more like it. So I have an object ID. I know ID is a synonym for object ID inside the server, and it has a column ID. So let's see if this is the one that has the bits of information. So I'm going to say where ID equals the object ID from the error message. Aha, bingo, okay. So here's two columns for that particular object ID that exist. These must be the two columns that it was complaining about. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to delete them. Or not. Okay, so I'm not actually allowed to update the system catalog. So let's try doing the trick from 2000, where we turn on allow updates. Oh, that's not very... So allow updates was already on, so it's still not going to let me. So let me try single user mode as a last resort. And then let's try doing my delete. Okay, still not allowing me to do it. So as a last resort, what I'm going to do is I'm going to shut down the server and start the server in single user mode. And then see if I can do it. So once I've started off SQL Server in single user mode, I'm then going to go back in with the DAC and see whether I can hack the system tables essentially. Okay, here we go. Back in the same database. Let's find my delete command. Hey, it worked. Okay. But it gives me an error message saying system table has been updated directly in the database and cache coherence may not have been maintained. SQL Server should be restarted. And that's also in the error log. So what that's saying is there's a cache of metadata information that's kept in memory in SQL Server. And if you go and use single user mode and the dedicated admin connection and change the system tables, that is not reflected in the cache. So then you have to shut down SQL Server again. Okay, so I'm going to shut it down again. And this time I'll just start it up normally. And then make sure it was fixed. Oops, I always get that error. Okay, so I fixed it. So there's two demos of fixing what on first sight looks like unrepairable corruptions. Okay. Now, the dedicated admin connection thing may sound like it's completely undocumented, but it's not. Dedicated admin connection is documented. The fact that you can see the system tables is documented in Books Online, and the SQL team have actually documented in forums on MSDN that you can get the server into single user mode and then change the system tables in situations like this. So this mechanism that I just showed you is actually documented. Okay. Now, I should say that for all these demos that I'm doing, every one of the demos, you'll get the recording of me doing them on the DVD, but I'm also, over the next few weeks, going to do a blog post for each one of these and have the actual corrupt databases that you can download with step-by-step instructions to follow through what I'm doing. Okay. Okay. Now, I've said a few times now that the best way to recover is always to use backups. That's the best way to avoid data loss. It may not be the best way to avoid having excessive downtime. It depends what backups you've got. If you only have, say, a full backup and it's a very large database, then it might take a very long time for that database to restore. And while the database is restoring, your database and your application are offline. Depending on the corruptions and how long CheckDB takes to run, it may be actually faster to allow the database to go into single user mode, which is just the same as it being unavailable during a restore, and get repair to work. Okay, so there's a trade-off there, right? The problem is, though, that with repair, you're probably going to lose data, because most of these corruptions need repair allow data loss, which deletes things. Okay, so you're starting to get the trade-offs between restore and repair that I'm going to talk about later on. So with backups, there's all kinds of different options. It's, you know, obviously way beyond the scope of the session. If you want to grab either me or Kimberly, we can talk for hours and hours. Well, Kimberly can talk for days on backups, and she likes it as well. So full database backup is the best thing to start with. At least that gives you one point to recover from. But that doesn't allow you to do point-in-time recovery. You can't do, for instance, single-page restores, and I'm going to show you this in a demo in a minute. If you have a series of log backups, then you can do point-in-time recovery, okay? Not only for getting past corruptions, but also getting past things like people accidentally dropping a table. You could do a point-in-time restore to just before the point in time when the table gets dropped, okay? A couple of things to remember about backups. You have to actually take them for them to be useful, okay? And they have to be valid to avoid data loss. Now, if you have a corrupt backup, then you can force that backup to restore. There's a command in 2005 called continue after error, which says, I know this backup is corrupt, but I want to make sure it restores. Now, you can see there's a situation, for instance, where you might have lost your database altogether. The database files are gone, and all you've got left is a corrupt backup. It's better to restore that corrupt backup and then recover as much as you can than have absolute and total data loss. Okay? There's also a case where if you have a corrupt database with no backups, so you're going to be forced to do a repair, you want to make sure you've got a backup of that corrupt database just in case something goes wrong with your repair scenario. Okay? So you can force backup to backup a corrupt database by doing backup with continue after error as well. Okay, so two interesting commands that were introduced in 2005, and these are documented. Okay. So choosing between restore and repair. There's a bunch of different decision points you should go through if you have backups to decide whether you're going to restore or repair. Okay, because you shouldn't just dismiss repair straight away, because repair might not actually cause data loss. It depends what the repairs are that it has to do. So some of the decision points are, do you still have a database at all? If you don't have a database, then you better have a backup. Okay? You have to use a backup in that case, because there's nothing to repair. Okay? Do you have working backups? If you don't have working backups, then you're either going to have to run repair, or you're going to have to restore a damaged backup, or you can try and extract out information into a new database. Okay? Is the log damaged? If the log is damaged, then you really should restore. If you can't restore from your backup, then you can use this thing called emergency mode. You can put the database into emergency mode, and I'll show you that in the last demo, and then you can actually extract out information. It's not transactionally consistent information because the log is damaged, recovery has not run, but you can at least get some of the information back. You could even go so far as running what's called emergency mode repair, which will fix up a database and rebuild the transaction log all in one atomic operation in 2005. But you start to see the different trade-offs that you're looking at. So then you get the output from CheckDB as long as you've got a database, of course. And did CheckDB fail? Did you get one of these error messages that said CheckDB just couldn't run that I showed you earlier on? If the answer is yes, then you're not going to be able to run a repair. That says you have to run an extraction or you have to do a restore. Okay? The output from CheckDB completed, was it just non-clustered indexes? If it is just non-clustered indexes, I told you, now you've got this trade-off of space against downtime. Okay? You could make that choice. Are there any unrepairable errors? So even though CheckDB finished, you got some of these unrepairable errors. In that case, you're going to have to restore or extract. Now, depending on what the errors are, you might be able to manually repair them, as I showed you in the previous two demos. Okay? So with all these things, you can see the key things are, firstly, you should have backups, and you should allow CheckDB to complete, so it tells you what's actually wrong. Because if you don't know what's actually wrong, you're not going to be able to make a valid choice, and you might make the wrong choice. Okay? So if you're still able to actually make a repair versus restore choice, then your service level agreements, your SLAs, come into play. And the two key ones are your downtime SLA and your data loss SLA. If you can still choose between repair and restore, choose whichever one allows you to limit downtime or data loss, whichever one's more important to you. Okay? So the next demo, what I've got is, I have a database that has a corrupt page, and I'm going to show you the different mechanisms for restoring. Firstly, when you've got a full set of backups, and secondly, when you've only got a full backup, no log backups. Okay, so I've got a kind of sales table, sales database, so I'll pretend to be a user. I'll run a command, and what's going to happen is I get an 824. Okay? Now let's have a look and see what this actually tells us. Well, there's a lot of information here. So in 2000 and before, when you had some kind of disk problem like this, you'd get an error message saying, read failed at offset blah in file. See your system administrator. And so you're sitting there thinking, well, okay, that's me. Now what do I do? Okay? Not the most helpful of error messages. So I like to joke that the reason that we took 5 years with SQL Server 2005 is that we were rewriting all our error messages to be nicer. Okay? So here this one, 824, says SQL Server detected a logical consistency error, incorrect page ID on a particular page. Here's what we expected. Here's what we actually saw. Oops. Here's what we actually saw. It occurred during a read of this page. It tells you which file, which database. Then it says additional messages in the SQL Server error log or system event log may provide more details. So it tells you where to go and look. It says this is a severe error condition. It tells you how bad it is. That threatens database integrity and must be corrected immediately. Complete a full database consistency check. So it's giving you prescriptive guidance. This error can be caused by many factors. Go and look in books online. So instead of just saying, oh, it's horrible, I don't know what to do, go look at your system administrator, and that's you, you don't know what to do, it actually tells you more about what went wrong, it tells you what could have happened, and it tells you where to go and look and what to do. So it gives you a much better set of guidance on what to do. I mean, it's still not saying what caused it, but it's better than just saying, oh, something went wrong. Okay. So the key thing there is run checkdb. Okay. So let's go back to our script and run checkdb. And I'm using the all error messages and no info messages switches. Okay, so this is telling us that the page is basically unusable. But we know we've got corruptions in there. Hey, so here we are, page 1158 could not be processed. See other errors for details. So there we go, the page ID in the header was up here. The page ID in the header was 00, and it should have been 1158. So clearly that page is corrupted. So I'm going to have a look and see what's actually wrong with the page. So again, I'm turning on my trace flag, and then I'm going to use dbcc page to have a look at that page value. So here's my header, and it's full of zeros. And oh, okay, so the page is corrupt so much that dbcc page can't do the interpretation. So dump style 3 is interpret all of the information on the page and print it out in nice readable format. Dump style 2 is just do a hex dump. And dump style 1 is just print the records as hex. Okay? This is all documented on my blog and the old storage engine blog. So I'm going to try a dump style 2, do a hex dump of the page, and wow, okay, so it's all zeros. So it looks like something in the IO subsystem just stomped all over that page. So that's clearly not repairable, not usable. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to set the database so that users cannot get in and hit this problem. Okay, so I'm going to set the database into restricted user mode. What restricted user mode means is DBOs and SA can get into the database. If I'd set the database to offline, then nobody could get in at all, which isn't very useful for me doing any kind of troubleshooting. So restricted user is a good tool to be able to kind of quarantine a database that's corrupt and still get in and play with it. So I'm going to do a single page restore. But before I do that, I want to look and see if there's any other pages that have been damaged. And the way that I'm going to do that is look in the suspect pages table in MSDB. Anytime a page is hit with an 823 or an 824 error, it's entered into this table, suspect pages. And that's going to have a list of all the pages that have been known corrupt but not repaired. And you can use that list as a DBA to drive a set of single page restores. So let's see if there's anything in there. This table is documented in Books Online. Okay, so there's my page. The event type is I got an 824. Again, these event types and so on are documented. So that's the only page that's damaged. So I'm going to go back out into master. And the first thing I'm going to do is back up the tail of the log. And that's usually a good thing to do in any disaster situation. Try and back up the tail of the log, because that's all the information that happened, all the changes that happened in the database since the last log backup was taken. So if anything goes wrong with the database, as long as you've got that tail of the log and all the log backups preceding it, you can do a point-in-time recovery and bring the database right up to the point in time that the disaster happened. So I'm going to back up the tail of the log. And then I'm going to proceed to do my single page restore. So what I'm doing is I'm restoring from my full backup. And before this started, I took a full backup and a log backup. So I've got a full backup. And the syntax for this is a regular restore database. But what I'm doing is specifying a page, and I'm specifying a page ID. And you'll see that that's exactly the same page ID format that was in the checkdb error. And that is file number 1, colon, page number 158. So I'm going to restore just that single page. And what that operation does is it looks through the backup looking for that one page and then restores it. If there's any transaction log in that full backup that pertains to that page, it's replayed onto that page. But look at this error message. Well, it's not an error message. Look at this message. The roll forward start point is now at log sequence number blah. So additional roll forward past this LSN is required to complete the restore. So it's keeping us updated of how much transaction log we still need to keep restoring before we've actually finished doing this single page restore. So I'll restore my first log backup. Okay, I didn't process anything because the log backup was empty. And if I had more log backups, then I'd go and do those all in sequence, okay? Now the last thing that I have to do is I have to restore the tail of the log. So there's my tail of log backup that I just did. I restore that. The online restore is complete, but with no recovery was specified. Use restore with recovery to bring affected data online. So a best practice whenever you're doing a restore involving multiple backups is to do what I've done here, which is to make sure that by default you use with no recovery. And what that's saying is lay down the transaction log, but don't actually recover anything yet. The moment that you allow one of the restore operations to run recovery, you cannot restore anything past that point, and you're back to square one again. Okay? So now to finish recovery, to force recovery to run, I'm just going to do restore database with recovery. Okay. So recovery runs. I'm going to set the database back online again. Run a quick checkdb just to show that everything's now fixed up. And if I run that original query again, everything works. Okay. So that's using single page restore with a series of backups to be able to do a point in time recovery of that particular page. Now I'm going to do exactly the same thing, but pretending that I've only got a full backup. So after I corrupted the database, I took a backup of it. So I'm going to restore that corrupt database. And now I'm back to the same corruption. So I'll just run that query and show you that I get an 824 again. We've got exactly the same situation. Okay, so the same 824. So I'm not going to go through the rigmarole of running a checkdb and so on. So how do I recover when I only have a full backup? Okay, I can't do single page restore. Now, I could restore the entire database, but if that database backup was taken a few days ago, then I've lost all the work that happened. Okay, so at this point, I'm doing the restore or repair trade-off, and I'm going to decide that I'm going to do a repair because I don't want to lose all the rest of the work in the database. So the first thing I'm going to do before running a repair is I'm going to back up the entire database. Just in case something goes wrong, I can always re-restore the corrupt database and I'm back to square one again and carry on trying to repair it again. So I back up my corrupt database. And then I'm going to run repair. So I'm putting the database into single user mode. I'm running repair allow data loss. And then I'm putting the database back into restricted user mode, not into multi-user mode. Okay, so there it says the error has been repaired, the error has been repaired, 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 repaired. Okay. So I get asked questions of, if I run repair, how can I tell whether it's fixed all the errors? And the easy way is to look down at this information at the end, where checkdb is going to say, I found this many consistency errors, and I fixed this many consistency errors, and so on. If all the numbers match, then it fixed everything. If they don't match, it didn't fix everything. Okay? And that means that if it didn't fix everything, you can look back in the list of errors and the output from repair, and it'll tell you which one it couldn't repair. It could be that there's an unrepairable error that you didn't notice. Okay? So repair has fixed everything, but it's probably deleted some information. So I know that I had 5,000 rows in my table. How many do we have now? Okay, so we've lost 245 rows. Now what I'd like to know is which rows are missing. Now, this table, I just happen to know, has an identity column, which is a monotonically increasing key value. So what I can do is I can look for the boundaries of the range that got deleted. I can do a query that says, look for a key value that doesn't have a key value plus one. Okay? That's going to be the start of my missing range. And then going backwards from the end of the table, look for a key value that doesn't have key value minus one. And that's going to be the end of my missing range. So that's what these two queries are doing. So this is going to tell me the range that's missing. So I'm missing everything between ID 1226 and 1470. So I know that I've got a full backup. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to restore the full backup to a different location, and I'm going to look at the same page that was corrupt and see if it just happens to have my range of rows on it. Now, if it does, then I can copy them back. The caveat being that I don't know if anything's changed on those rows. Okay, it may not be the most up-to-date set of information, but at least I can get the information back. So I get my file list only, and I'm going to use that to feed into doing a repair with move. A restore with move. So I restore my database to demo restore repair copy. And then I'll use my friend DBCC page again and look in that corrupt page on the restored copy of the database, 1158. So this is a bit better. So the first row has, sales ID 1226. And let's go right down to the end of the page. And 1470. So this contains the entire set of rows, hopefully, that we were missing. But again, they may not be the most up-to-date set of rows. So I'm going to copy all these rows over. Now, there's an identity column in here, and I want to preserve the identity values. And I can tell SQL Server that I'm telling it an actual identity value and don't generate a new one. And I can do that by saying set identity insert. So I'm going to set identity insert on the table that I'm copying into. And then I'm going to do a insert into the real table from the copy table and only insert that missing set of information. Okay, so it's got all 245 rows. So at least I know I've got every row that was deleted, but again, maybe not the completely up-to-date ones. So I'll turn identity insert off and just do a select count star, and there I'm back to my 5,000 rows. So there's an example of I didn't have the backups I needed to do a kind of point-in-time repair or restore, but what I was able to do was run repair and then salvage some information out of the full backup that I did have. Okay? So it wasn't a total loss. So beware of running repair allow data loss. Okay? The name was very carefully chosen, saying if you're typing repair allow data loss, it's because you're letting it lose data. Okay? A lot of the repairs that CheckDB does, the way that it does it is it just deletes information. The reason for that is because it's the fastest repair, it's the most provably correct repair in all cases. Okay? I couldn't put repairs into the product that would work 99% of the time, and 1% of the time it was indeterminate whether it would work or just make things worse. Okay? They have to be absolutely correct. If somebody runs repair, it has to work. Okay? For the repairs that it can actually repair. So that doesn't mean that repair goes out of its way to delete information. It just doesn't go out of its way to try and save information. It does the fastest, most provably correct repairs. Now, because it deletes things, it doesn't take into account constraints that you might have between tables. It might delete a row out of a table that's actually a constraint is enforcing. Remember in the previous demo that I tried to do, I couldn't manually delete a row. Now, if I tried to do a similar kind of repair with CheckDB, it would have just deleted the row and not taken into account the constraint. It doesn't take into account, obviously, any inherent constraints that you've got but not enforced. You might have built something in with your business logic or data relationships. And it doesn't take into account whether you've got any kind of replication setup. There's a section in Books Online that says if you're going to go and run repair on a database that actually has a publication on it, you have to quiesce the replication topology and then reinitialize your subscribers afterwards. Because the repairs that CheckDB does are not replicated. Okay? So before running a repair, I've said this several times, protect yourself. Take a backup of the corrupt database, just in case something goes wrong and you have to go back. Okay. And then after running repair, check the data. You might want to run DBCC check constraints. If you know that you've got foreign key constraints, for instance, run DBCC check constraints and it will check them for you. Okay. And then fix up any replication topologies. So what if the log is damaged? If the log is damaged, I said, without a backup, you've got two realistic choices. You have to put the database into emergency mode. That's the only way you can get in if you don't have a backup. And then you can extract the data out, okay, but the data might not be transactionally consistent, or you can run repair. Now, there's a special emergency mode repair that I put into 2005. And the reason for that is because people do get themselves into the situation where they have a corrupt database and a corrupt log and no backup. And so what they would have to do in 2000 and before was find some information on the internet that explained how to use an undocumented dangerous command called DBCC rebuild log, and then rebuild the log, and then sometimes they would just carry on without realizing that the database was still corrupt, and they had to run a full CheckDB with repair allow data loss to fix things up. So all of these different steps I put into an atomic emergency mode repair. So if you have a database that's in emergency mode and you do CheckDB with repair allow data loss, it will force recovery to extract as much information out of the log as it can, then rebuild the log, then run repair allow data loss, and then bring the database back online. So it does it all in an atomic operation. Okay? So in this case, this is the third worst state to be in, as far as I'm concerned, where you don't have a backup and your log is damaged. Okay? So some things that people often try first when they're in this kind of situation where everything's corrupt and they don't know what to do. They might restart SQL Server. And I've seen all of these things. They might restart SQL Server. Restarting SQL Server is not going to do anything. When the server comes back up, the database will still be damaged. The log file will still be damaged. Okay? You're just wasting time. They might immediately jump to one of the last resorts. Without figuring out what's gone wrong, they might run repair or go and rebuild a log. Now, either of these things could cause A, data loss, or B, more data loss. Okay? Rebuilding a log usually causes more data loss, which then has to be fixed up with running repair. So one of these things that people jump to is not a good thing. And probably the worst thing I see people do is they have a database that's suspect, and they think, detach it and then reattach it. And there's information on the internet that says, go detach and then reattach your suspect database, and that should fix it. Absolutely not. A suspect database is because the log is damaged, or the database is damaged in such a way that part of running recovery hits a damaged page and recovery can't complete. If you detach that suspect database, when you try to reattach it again, the server is going to try and run recovery. And if recovery fails, it won't attach the database. So now you've taken a corrupt database that was in the system and you could repair, and you've detached it, and now you can't reattach it again. Okay? And that's pretty hard to get it back in. This is the second worst state to be in. But there is a trick you can use to do that, to get the database attached again. And that's what I'm going to show you in the next demo. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a suspect database, detach it, and then hack it back into SQL Server. So now I'm going to create a database called demo suspect. I'm going to create an employees table with some completely random information and projected yearly bonuses for these employees. So now what I'm going to do is, what? Bigger bonus. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to pretend to make a mistake, and I'm actually going to set Kimberly's bonus to zero. Okay. That's what happens when you do smart ass comments, see? And I'm going to do a checkpoint. So I'm going to force that information to disk. So now there's an active transaction that set Kimberly's bonus to zero, and I've forced the data page that has that zero bonus in it to disk. Okay? So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to simulate a crash by shutting down the server. Okay? So the server's now shut down. So on disk, we've got a zero bonus. We've got a transaction in the transaction log that when it recovers, will reset that bonus back to 10,000. Or not, because I'm going to corrupt the transaction log. So this is the hex editor that I like to use, XVI32. It's a freeware hex editor. And I'm going to open up the transaction log for this database. There's the transaction log. And I'm going to corrupt it by just filling the first couple of rows with complete zeros. Okay? That transaction log is now corrupt. So I'll write it out to disk. And then I will start up SQL Server again. So as part of starting up SQL Server, what's going to happen is all the databases will run through crash recovery. This one's going to run through crash recovery, and what I'm hoping is it's not going to work. So let's try using the database. I'll get the disconnected error. So, okay, cannot be opened due to inaccessible files or insufficient memory or disk space. Okay, so this is looking good for my demo, looking bad for Kimberly. So let's look at the status of the database. So the database is now suspect. Okay. So I go out into the internet and I read saying, okay, I've got a suspect database. What do? I get told to detach it. So I'm going to try detaching the database. Okay, so error while closing the database, check previous additional errors, retry the operation. So let's see if it actually succeeded. Okay, it's gone. So I've detached my suspect database. So now let's try attaching it again. And it won't attach because the header for the log file is damaged. So now I've got a detached corrupt database that I can't attach again using sp-attach-db. So let's try using, there's a function from create database where you can say attach rebuild log if there's no log. So let's try doing that. Okay, so that's not working either. So let's try deleting the transaction log and then trying that. So before I do that, I'm going to take a copy of these files. So there's my copies there. Then I'm going to delete the log file. And let's try running this again. That doesn't work either, because this command only works when the database was cleanly shut down. Now, my database wasn't cleanly shut down, so I cannot now attach this database back at all. What am I going to do? Okay, so here's the trick. The way to reattach a suspect database is create another database of exactly the same name with the same number of files with roughly the same file sizes. Then you shut down SQL Server, rip out the new database, and drop in the corrupt files. When you restart SQL Server, the database is already attached, but this time it'll start up and run crash recovery. The database will still be corrupt, but you've managed to reattach that suspect database. So that's what I'm going to do. I create my suspect database. Oops. I need to delete the actual file as well, because I left it there. Now, I still have my copies. Very important, you still have these copies left around. So let's try that again. Okay, so now I've got my suspect database. Let me just check that the files are there. Whoops. Okay, so there's my dummy database here. So I'm going to shut down SQL Server now. I'm going to delete the dummy database files. And then I'm going to copy in the old files. Now, I'm very paranoid, so I'm going to make copies of the copies. And I'm going to rename the copies of copies. So I'm renaming them to be exactly the same as the dummy database, which had the same file names as the original database. Oops. Okay, now I'm going to restart SQL Server. And hopefully, my database, cross fingers, will be there. Haha, okay, so it's there. But it's still suspect. But at least I've got it reattached, okay? So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into emergency mode. I don't have a backup at this database, so I have no choice but to run emergency mode repair. So I'm going to go into emergency mode and run repair allow data loss. But you can't. You have to be in single user mode as well. You have to put the database into emergency mode and single user mode. Then you can run repair allow data loss. So let's do that. Okay, so it's done some more things. What it's tried to do is it's tried to run recovery. Remember I said the various steps that emergency mode repair does. It's tried to run recovery and it couldn't. Okay, then it tries the regular log rebuilding and it couldn't because the log's so damaged. So then what's actually done is the checkdb part has kicked in and just forced the log to be rebuilt. Okay, so it says the warning, the log for database demo suspect has been rebuilt. Transactional consistency has been lost. The restore chain is broken. And the server no longer has context in the previous log files, so you'll need to know what they were. You should run checkdb to validate physical consistency. The database has been put into DBO only mode. When you're ready to make the database available for use, you'll need to reset, blah, 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 blah. 5 years. This is why we took 5 years, okay? But at least it's telling you all this cool information, right? So now it's been fixed, but look at this. Because we detached the database and then had to hack it back in, what happens when we created the new database, the dummy database, was it got a new service broker GUID. Okay, and that was stored in master. When we hacked in the original database, it had a different service broker GUID. So the two GUIDs now don't match. So because you detached and reattached, you now can't use service broker. Okay. Now, if you were brave, what you could do is you could take the GUIDs, because it tells you them, and you could shut down the server, put it in single user mode, connect with the DAC, and hack the system tables to put that GUID in. Okay. But it's better just not to detach the suspect database. So now we've got the database, and it should be online. We can get in, okay? And the status is online. But what about the data? Now, unfortunately, the transaction log was ripped out, so poor Kimberly doesn't get a bonus this year. Okay? Yeah, mine. What this is showing is that if you use emergency mode repair, what you're saying is rip out the transaction log and any active transactions that have not yet been recovered, so they don't get a chance to roll back. So you're going to get transactionally inconsistent information. So in this case, it was a kind of innocuous thing. We knew what was happening. In a very large OLTP system with potentially thousands of transactions in flight, if you do that, who knows what the state of your data is in? Okay? At least you get into the database, but who knows what state the database is in terms of data and built-in business logic and so on. So that was getting a suspect database in, and we are on time. Excellent. So what if you're in this state? You have no database at all, and you have no backup to restore from. Okay? So you have absolute total data loss. This is the worst state to be in, obviously, okay? So you might have no choice, okay? What you might have to do, as Kimberly likes to say, is URLT, which Kimberly is update resume, leave town, okay? Now, seriously, in this state, I've seen DBAs lose their jobs because of this, okay? And I've seen companies have to go through manual reentry. The very, very, very worst state of corruption that I ever saw somebody get into, it was a US state, and a technician overnight accidentally reformatted a set of drives that were storing a database and the backups for the database. And that was it. The database just happened to store all of the income tax records for all companies and people in that state. Okay? And it was lost completely. Okay? It took 300 federal employees 2 weeks to re-enter the data. But they lost all of the kind of disputes and the kind of in-progress tax returns. So the unsubstantiated report of losses that I heard from this state was $2 billion of tax revenue, okay? Because they didn't have proper backups. That's the worst state to be in. However, no job losses, okay? Federal employees, no job losses. So, pulling everything together, okay? The key to not panicking, not losing data, not having so much downtime is, first of all, know the signs of corruption. Know when things could be going wrong, okay? Once you determine that things could be going wrong, follow this kind of methodology. Run CheckDB, let it complete. Figure out the extent of the corruption. Now you've got some tips and tricks on how you can interpret the results of CheckDB to figure out whether there's anything you can do apart from just run repair or run restore, okay? If you're gonna run repair, make sure you take a backup first. Then fix the corruption, and probably you're gonna have to just put the database back online. But at some point afterwards, what I haven't talked about yet is do root cause analysis. Okay, try and figure out what caused the corruption, because the odds are if it was a hardware problem, it's probably gonna happen again. Okay, so there's some resources. Oh, right at the bottom there. Most important thing, test. Go through this before you have to do it for real. It's far easier to figure out what the correct set of steps are when you don't have management shouting at you, when you don't have users shouting at you on the phone, when your business is not losing money, okay, than when they are. Okay, so testing. So some resources. On my blog, there's all kinds of information about how CheckDB works, how repair works. There's example corrupt databases, and you'll get some more when I do some more blog posts over the next couple of weeks, that allow you to see what CheckDB is going to do with corruptions, see how backup and restore are going to cope with corruptions, and what kind of error messages you might see. There's also some corruption forums. There's an MSDN disaster recovery forum that I monitor. There's a couple of disaster of data corruption forums on SQL Server Central and one on SQLteam.com that I have alerts that whenever someone posts, I monitor those and I post responses. So, and the other thing you can do is just email me. Okay, if you have a problem, if you're in a critical situation, don't email me. Okay, because you're not going to get a reply straight away. Okay. But if you've got some kind of if you've got a corruption, say, on a dev database or a test database, or just you want some information about how to interpret this CheckDB result or some best practices, send me an email. I'll be happy to help you. Okay. Some related content. Kimberly and I are doing a database maintenance session tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about corruption, taking backups, and so on. I've just taken over the regular SQL Q&A column in TechNet magazine, and I'm also going to be writing some articles. There's one coming out in August on database maintenance. I'm going to be writing some more around maintenance, backups, corruption recovery, and so on as well, so keep an eye on that. The last thing is Kimberly and I are going to be cooperating with Kaylin Delaney. We're going to be authoring a new book on SQL Server 2008 internals, and I'm going to write a long chapter on CheckDB and repair. Okay. So with that, thank you very much for coming. I'm going to be... Thank you.